Earlier this week, the Mongolian government reclaimed an allegedly stolen 70-million-year-old Tyrannosaurus skeleton that had mysteriously turned up for sale at an American auction house. The transfer marks the end of an international legal dispute which began when a number of paleontologists, including my next guest, started asking questions. So we are joined now by Mark A. Norell, the head of paleontology at the American Museum of Natural History, and I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little about this particular species of Tyrannosaurus? These are not rexes. I always thought the two words go together.
No, it's actually the Tyrannosaurus, sort of a collective term for a lot of different genera of dinosaurs or species of dinosaurs. I mean, this particular animal is called Tarbosaurus, and it's a very close relative to Tyrannosaurus rex. I mean, the major difference is being it's a little bit smaller, but it lived approximately at the same time, but in Asia rather than North America.
And you have spent a fair amount of time in the Gobi Desert, which is rich with dinosaur bones, dinosaur fossils?
Yes, it is. We've been excavating there for the past 23 years, and we're looking forward to going back this summer.
Is this species considered a relatively rare find?
Yeah, anytime you find a relatively complete carnivorous dinosaur, it's a pretty big deal. I mean, just like in the past, I mean, just like today, that there's a far fewer carnivorous animals than there are herbivorous animals. So to find an animal like this relatively complete is really a great discovery.
Well, how did you learn that this skeleton was put up for auction in Manhattan?
Well, these sorts of auctions have been going on here and there for a long time. I mean, it's only been recently that Mongolia has really developed an infrastructure to be able to deal with this, because as an emerging nation, that they had other things that they were really concentrating on more. But really, when they were auctioning this thing in New York, it was on the cover of the auction catalog at Heritage Auctions. And, you know, I quite frequently get these auction catalogs in the mail. And, you know, personally, I mean, I have nothing against the commercial trade in fossils as long as it's done ethically and that the laws of foreign governments are respected. But this one was just on their cover. I knew it was from Mongolia, so we started making noise.
And it was being auctioned for around $1 million. Is that the average going rate for a fossil like this in the open market?
Yeah, I think actually, I mean, that if there wouldn't have been any problems with this Tyrannosaur at all, if it had squeaky clean provenance, the prices probably would have been driven up.
The auction house described the Tyrannosaurus fossil as an incredible complete skeleton, painstakingly excavated and prepared.
Yeah.
Now, this was excavated by an amateur, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, it depends on what you call an amateur. I mean, certainly is that there's people who are out there in the international sort of fossil looting business who, you know, it's value added. They do excavate quite carefully. In some cases, many of these people have even had professional training, but then that they've sort of moved on. I mean, in the same way that archaeological treasures disappear from a lot of countries, paleontological ones do as well.
Well, this is a huge animal. What would somebody do with it? Who buys these things, and do they put it in the foyer?
Yeah. I mean, this particular one, the person who bought it, that was planning on putting it in the basically the foyer of a corporate office building.
How did it become clear to you that the skeleton had been looted?
Well, I mean, certainly that they were kind of cagey in that their description of where it came from. It didn't have a country listed. It just said Central Asia. But the only place that Tarbosaurus bones have ever been found is Mongolia. And in fact, that the defense attorneys tried to say, well, how do you know it's from Mongolia? And we were able to get, you know, people from representatives from the Chinese Academy of Sciences, from Kazakhstan, from Russia, the surrounding countries, to say, no, this definitively is not from those countries.
Well, how would someone even go about smuggling a dinosaur fossil? I have to imagine that a customs official would notice me if I were carrying a 24-foot-long dinosaur skeleton in my luggage.
Well, I think that these things really, when that they are moved out of the country, that they're unprepared, meaning that they're still in blocks of rock. And you know, in most countries around the world, some of the things that move through customs, you know, whether there's bribes involved or whether that or not that it's just oversight, is pretty incredible, because there's some, you know, major monumental pieces of architecture that appear in the art market.
So, but there are rules and regulations.
Yes,
if somebody had found it, this guy could not have brought it
into
the country.
Definitely. I mean, Mongolia has had very, very strict rules about the export of fossil specimens since the 1920s.
My guest is Mark A. Norell, head of paleontology at the American Museum of Natural History. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. At the center of this case is a man named Eric Procopi, a self-described commercial paleontologist from Florida, who pleaded guilty in December to smuggling and other charges?
Yes.
Are there a lot of commercial paleontologists?
Yeah, actually, there's quite a few. And in just, I mean, again, this is totally analogous to the trade in antiquities and art. I mean, they go all the way from people who have squeaky clean provenance, who actually our museum and other major museums deal with quite frequently, to people who are really sort of in the gray area, to people who it's totally black market.
Well, in the case of antiquities, often the locals know that, realize there's a tomb somewhere, and they dig it up, and then they sell it in town. But in this case, Eric Procopi found the skeleton himself.
I don't think so. I mean, I think that if you look at the specimen, it has all the indications of it being looted twice, because that one of the first things to say, nomads are out in the middle of the Gobi Desert and going back and forth, and they find a remarkable dinosaur skeleton.
What happens? A little piece of a bone pops up from the sand?
Yeah, you'll see bones laying around on the surface. Usually what happens is that they'll take the teeth and they'll take the claws, because that those sorts of things are easily transportable and you can sell them on the curio tourist market. But then organized groups go to the Gobi Desert and they talk to the nomads and they say, do you know where there's any dinosaurs? And they take them out to these places and stuff where that they've already found something, and then that they're excavated then. And this specimen, for instance, has only a couple of the original teeth and claws on it. So it really has the indications that it had been found by someone. They'd taken the curio parts of it and stuff, and they left the rest.
Still, you also have to know how to dig them up without destroying them, don't you?
Right.
So there was a certain amount of expertise here. He is going to, Procopi, return a number of other skeletons which were smuggled out of Mongolia. How often do fossils from the Gobi Desert end up for sale in the West?
Unfortunately, quite often. I mean, if you go to some of the international fossil fairs, I mean, the two largest ones are the one in Munich in the fall and then the one in the wintertime in Tucson. You know, one sees Mongolian fossils pretty regularly, as well as fossils smuggled from other countries.
Do people sometimes cobble together different specimens and pass them off as a single skeleton?
All of the time. I mean, certainly complete skeletons are extraordinarily rare. So that a lot of the fossils there are chimeras of things that are put together.
And are there ever fakes?
There's fakes a lot as well. So that there's even fakes that have duped some professional paleontologists.
There are endless arguments about works of art that have been removed from their points of origin. The Elgin Marble is probably the most famous, but museums are constantly debating over whether they should return things or not. Do you see a difference between how we treat works of art and how we treat fossils?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that all of these things are part of the patrimony of individual countries, and that most major museums, like, for instance, the one that I work at, we have very extensive collection policy guides, which that really don't allow us to be able to even study or even have on premises specimens which that have been taken illegally out of different countries.
Although there is an awful lot of stuff taken from Native Americans that never seems to be returnable.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, that there are, we have an extensive, you know, repatriation group at the museum, and I think that overall our interactions with Native American groups over the last two decades has been fairly positive.
The argument that the British Museum has about the Elgin Marbles is that they probably would have been destroyed if they had been left in place. Does Mongolia have the facilities to keep these skeletons in as good condition as an American museum might?
Not previously, it hasn't. And in my own expeditions, for instance, we've held on to a lot of the specimens for quite a while with the consent of the Mongolian government, just because they didn't have an infrastructure to be able to put them. However, the Tarbosaurus is being returned to Mongolia in the next several weeks, and they've really created like a new dinosaur museum from an old dinosaur museum, and that the previously the Lenin Museum in downtown Ulaanbaatar is going to now become the Mongolian National Museum of Dinosaurs.
Now, why did dinosaur fossils so often turn up in desert areas? Were these once Great Lakes that have dried up?
Well, I think that the reason that dinosaur fossils appear so often in desert areas is just because of exposure, because the plants aren't covering the ground.
So if we were digging below this building, there's a possibility we would find something?
Not in Manhattan, but few people know that the first dinosaur fossils ever discovered in North America were collected about 15 miles south of here in northern New Jersey. And if one just goes right over the George Washington Bridge to New Jersey, there's actual dinosaur bones and dinosaur fossils that are found in the red rocks along the cliffs there.
Still. But we're not having people doing digs there?
Well, they aren't really complete animals because all the complete animals were collected long ago and that they're extraordinarily rare and that sort of thing. But occasionally teeth and bones do show up from northern New Jersey.
Well, do you have any hopes of finding complete skeletons in the near future?
Well, certainly. I mean, we've done very well in the Gobi Desert over the last couple of decades. We're also excavating at a few other places around the world. We'll be in Transylvania in the next several weeks. Then after that, we have a team going to Qinghai in the northern part of the Tibetan Plateau.
How difficult is it to work in the Gobi? It gets pretty hot, doesn't it?
Yeah, it gets. I mean, it just depends. I mean,
and
I,
then
I,
in Tibet, you're in frigid weather.
Yeah,
with little oxygen.
I thrive in deserts. I like heat, so it doesn't really bother me that much.
Uh-huh. Is the United States a good source? Dinosaur skeletons?
You know, there's like four or five good places on the whole planet. One is the western continental interior of the United States. I mean, certainly a lot of the classic collections, including our own at the American Museum, really were found in Wyoming, Montana, Colorado, Utah. But we've really extended further afield internationally now because there's so many museums out in those areas, the Museum of the Rockies, the Denver Museum of Natural History, the Museum in Salt Lake City, which really do excellent jobs of collecting those specimens. And quite frankly, some of the issues and problems that our lab groups are interested in, that you really have to go to Asia to find them.
Are you when you find these skeletons, are you more interested in displaying them or doing research with them?
Doing research, and we don't go out and collect things to display because that now, for instance, the way the international rules are is that rarely does our museum ever get to keep permanently the specimens that we collect. I mean, anything that we collect in China, in Mongolia, by our contracts with those governments, is the patrimony of those countries, and it's returned to those countries after we study them.
And what are you learning from them
that
you don't already know? I mean, you were one of the first proponents of the idea that birds are the descendants of dinosaurs. Has that been pretty much agreed to by all the scientists?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much etched in stone by now. And I mean, but some of the issues that we're looking at now, we're looking at the origin of feathers, the origin of flight. You know, I've been fortunate enough to be involved in a lot of the work on the feathered dinosaurs from northern China, as well as, interestingly enough, we're able, with CAT scan information, to look at dinosaur skulls to be able to understand their brains and to make comparisons of those brains with the brains of living birds.
And they're a lot closer than they are to reptiles?
Oh, much closer. I mean, I think that if you would have take yourself back 65, 70 million years ago when lots of these animals were alive, you would just say these are weird-looking birds because they would have had feathers, they would have behaved and acted like birds.
So maybe Alfred Hitchcock was onto something.
Yeah.
Mark Norell is the head of paleontology at the American Museum of Natural History. Thank you so much for being on our show again.
Yeah, it's always a delight.